This recording is a production of the Conservative Anabaptist Education Committee. This presentation was recorded at Conservative Anabaptist School Board Institute 2022, held at Horizon Mennonite School in Hagerstown, Maryland, on March 4 and 5.
The next item on the agenda is the 10-minute talks. I always look forward to these, hearing good advice packed into a good capsule. So we will let Mark Webb, Lyndon Hartman, Anthony Hurst, and Jonas Souter go ahead in that order, and I don't need to stand up in between. So Mark Webb, keeping minutes.
Well, he's getting things set up there. On behalf of the Conservative Anabaptist Education Committee, I would like to just thank you for your offering and supporting this work, and also for the support of the doc. And I just especially want to also thank the community here for the excellent job they're doing. Okay, taking minutes. One of the things that I found helpful in doing this over the years is to arrive early. It's helpful if the chairman of the school board also gives you an agenda ahead of time so that you can get some of your notes put in. I like to use my laptop. Not everybody's comfortable with that. That's how I prefer to take minutes. It's important to stay awake or engaged in what's going on. And some people try to take minutes and they try to write everything down that's being said. You don't want to do that. You want to listen very closely to what's being said and then try to record it as concise as possible in the minutes. And it helps to try to record that accurately, sometimes even asking the chairman, is this, you know, does this summarize it correctly? One big thing is trying to make a difference between what was just a discussion and what was a decision. Because in 5 years from now, somebody else goes back and looks at it. You don't want a discussion to them to think a discussion was a decision. So I'm going to just run through a quick minute for you here. I think it's important to have the date when the meeting took place. Also the place, sometimes you always have it at the same place, so it's not as critical, but maybe you're rotating around to different locations. That's important. List who was there, and I always, when I take minutes, particularly for our men's meetings and other things, I also write down who was not there, just to help keep everybody on their toes later on. Record what time the meeting started. And if you notice, one of the things I heard here already was, you know, how many hours the meeting goes or what happens. I sometimes will have been at a meeting, maybe it's a minister's meeting or a school board meeting, or and I come home and I've got this just a few little notes, and my wife says, you were gone that long and that's all you talked about? Okay, it's important to have a kind of a start time. It helps kind of keep everybody from making as many bunny trails and so on, though some of those are okay. Recording who had prayer. Sometimes the chairman, that's helpful to them. If they're asking different people to lead in prayer, they know from, well, last time so-and-so did it. And I've noticed already sometimes chairmen will ask the same one or two people pretty much every time, and having a list, it kind of divides that out a little bit. Another thing that we usually have a reading of the minutes is often done in board meetings, should be done, and the approval and correction of the minutes. Now, one of the things that happens, it's good to make sure that you've corrected those. I like to, if there's many corrections, to go ahead and just give everybody another copy. But note that it was corrected, and that the approval for the minutes. That way, it actually goes in as an official minutes rather than everybody having a different version. Treasurer's report is most times is included in our school board meetings, and we heard some about the money matters and so on that take place there. Principal's report, I'm not sure how your school boards do it. We typically have the teachers and principal come to our meetings, and we give teacher reports, and they do that at the beginning of the meeting. You can ask them any questions you want, then they're dismissed. The principal stays longer, but the teachers can kind of give a report of how things are going in their classroom. And, you can kind of, in your minutes, you can summarize that a little bit so that particularly if there's things you need to follow up on for later. This is an important part of every minutes is the old business or tabled items. And generally the chairman will give some direction on if some of these things are just put back on the agenda or whether he wants them tabled again or whatever. But a couple examples of that is often maintenance projects or maybe an ongoing thing that you're still looking for a teacher, that kind of thing that happens. But it's helpful to keep that stuff alive. Don't just let it, at the end of each meeting, things that are not concluded put in that were tabled and then bring those back up again. Now, some of the school board might groan that you put it on there again, but if it needs to be taken care of, you need to make sure that it's back on there. And one other thing, Matt Peachy is taking minutes for our board meeting at present, and he had this new thing that none of us really like, but it's very helpful, is he highlights in a different color each board member where your name shows up and what you were supposed to do before the next meeting. And so that kind of helps take care of some of this old business stuff. If it says Mark was supposed to have done this and this, and there you come to the meeting and there it is. But it is, it's helpful to record that kind of information. As you think about the new business agenda, as we said, I usually write these out in a sort of like I'm doing here with an outline type of format and list them that way, recording accurately any decisions that were made. And that's very, very important because people, we often go back and look at minutes of, maybe a prior board or whatever even and see what they decided. And so it's important that you have that. And giving a brief summary of the things discussed. Now, sometimes you'll have, depending on the type of things that you're looking at, maybe even like you're looking for a teacher, you may list a number of names that you need to, that you want to contact. Well, it's important to put those in and maybe the order that you're going to contact them, but it's not like a decision, we found a new teacher. And usually at the end of a meeting, I try to look across this and keep it separate, but look across and then move those things down to tabled items. Sometimes your chairman will say, maybe it's something that was tabled last meeting, and they say, we don't have time to really discuss that now, but it does need to be taken care of. We're going to table that again. Well, you can automatically, when I'm typing up my minutes, I have that already in my computer, so it's easy to just drop down there, put it in, and then it's taken care of for the next time. The other thing is recording the time the meeting was adjourned. I've found that doing this puts meetings back into a reasonable time frame if you do this. If the time isn't really kept track of, it can soon get away. And minutes. Yeah, there's times that, like I mentioned, bunny trails, that can be okay just for relationship-wise and other things, but you're going to hear from Jonas on how the chairman's supposed to keep that happening. That's not your job. But one thing I would say as far as the secretary is sometimes the chairman will want to just go on to the next subject, and it's not really been decided or clarified, and just to interrupt then and say, what was the decision here? What do I put in the minutes? And it's not like you're trying to take over for what the chairman's doing. They'll thank you for it later, but it does kind of help you, you know, make sure that everything is finalized as you go along. Any questions that anyone would have about taking minutes? You might feel more comfortable doing it with paper and writing on it. You might find it more comfortable with doing it on a computer. Yes?
Did the rest of the board receive it?
Okay. I have found that with email, we tend to email minutes out, and so we kind of take care of some of the corrections, but usually if it goes a whole month until they see it, they don't often remember exactly what all was happening, particularly if it was a long day and then it was a long meeting. So giving it to them a little earlier can kind of help you, and you can make those corrections when you get to the next meeting. So I would take it then and then bring a printed copy to hand out at your meeting. Any other questions? Okay, thank you.
Good afternoon. It's a pleasure to be here. I really enjoy these 10-minute talks when someone else is giving them. High school, how far? I guess there's a question mark after high school as well. Can you imagine me as an eighth grader? No, you can't. I can't really remember that myself. But I went to school for 8 years, and we had a graduation exercise. About that time, our school decided to try high school, and I have the distinction of being part of the class that graduated twice, because we also had high school graduation. That makes me somewhat pro-high school, but I'm also a Christian Life rep. I go to many, many schools that do not have high school, and I see them working quite well. So we want to just look at, and I'm sorry there's nothing up here on the screen. I'm not one of those people, so I apologize right now. First of all, I want to look at the cons, the negative side of high school. What can happen there? Why does it look like a huge hurdle when you're starting? One of the things that you're probably going to face is parents who only had an eighth grade education that are now going to try to help with homework on a high school level. And maybe they've been struggling with seventh and eighth grade as well, and to them, oh, let's not go there, let's not do that. That's just maybe one problem, one reason given. And maybe no one's brave enough to give it, but they're thinking it. One thing that can happen in a high school setting is there's more chance of boy-girl problems. I have a brother and a sister that are 7 and 8 years older than I, and during that phase, our school did reach 11th grade. They were working towards high school again, and then they dropped back to the 8th grade after there was a serious problem with some boy-girl relationships that were improper. I don't seem to see that as much in our schools and school settings as I did back then. I'm not saying it went away, but it is something to consider, to be cautious about, The third negative thing I would say is that knowledge does not equal wisdom. If you're going to start a high school, you better know why you're starting that high school. And it shouldn't be just because we want more knowledge. It shouldn't be just the idea that, well, we're going to keep them busy and out of trouble by sending them to school. There may be some validity in some of that, but let's have higher goals, let's have loftier goals than those. That's not a good foundation for starting high school. And another thing to think about is, maybe I should explain here, is that high school doesn't necessarily mean all the way to 12th grade. I go into a lot of schools where they go to 9th grade, and then there's other schools that go to 10th grade. 11th grade is the odd one. You don't usually have a school that only goes to 11th grade. Now, a lot of our schools that do have high school, the children are finishing in 3 years. That creates a whole other set of problems. And if you're thinking about starting high school, talk to some people that have knowledge, experience about it, and then make a decision what your three-year plan is or your four-year plan. There was one school I visited that they said the only way we could get a high school started is if we subjected ourselves to a three-year plan. And I think they're already, you know, there may be people who are starting to reevaluate that and say, not everybody can do it in 3 years. Are we putting too much pressure on the children? You know, you're going into other questions there. Knowledge does not equal wisdom. Let's come back to that just a little bit more. So another issue you're going to be facing then as you look to start a high school is I've got to have a quality teacher there. That made it sound like the elementary grades don't have to have quality, and I disagree strongly with that. First grade is still your most important grade, and that's where the quality starts and it keeps on going. But I need to have someone that can relate. Maybe that's the better way to say it. That can relate well to those high schoolers, their anxieties, their problems, their issues that they face, that knows how to teach those classes in a way that reaches those children. I've been in high school settings where it is completely, or mostly, an individualized setting, and the teacher is a placeholder. You understand what I'm saying there. Depending on your situation, you may have to have some individualized to make things work. But I like to see where there are some classes, there's some interaction on a class level in a high school setting if you're going to go that way. What are some pros for a high school? It takes time, but you end up with a better education pool in your community if it's done correctly. Pretty soon you've got parents that have had a high school education, they're helping their young children, and it's becoming easier for them. Not easy, but it's easier. You begin to have this a little better higher educated pool that you're pulling teachers out of. I see that a lot in communities, and I even had an interesting conversation with a school board member one time when he said that they decided to go with high school. There was a lot of resistance against it in their community. But once they started turning out boys, young men and young ladies with a high school education, guess who they were asking to come back as teachers? It wasn't the ones that dropped out at eighth grade. It was the ones that graduated from high school. High school presents another opportunity for teacher apprentices that I don't see in an eighth grade operation. There's some possibilities there, but there is more possibility of that in a high school setting. Third, and this is more personal to the individual child, is I think it prepares a child to further his own education. or to, maybe I should say it, to further his education on his own. There is something about those years, I would feel it in myself. If I would have stopped at that eighth grade graduation, I think I would be even more arrogant than I am. And you have to talk to people that travel with me about that. We try to be humble. But there is something about the high school years that took some of the starch out of me, too. And when it comes to subjects like Bible, those are great if you can have classes on those and have discussion time. And they feel free to ask those questions that maybe they're scared to ask somewhere else. But by going through that high school experience, there's the opportunity to understand how to educate further. And I'm not talking about necessarily going to college, about taking an online course or just getting some textbooks and learning on their own. They're better able to do that. We can have the opportunity for public speaking for the boys. Critical thinking from all the students on a different level, because there is a different maturity level in those grades. As I said, everything of this nature has a negative side, has a positive side. If you're thinking about high school, talk to people who have experience. Get answers before you just dive into it and then learn from your own experience. That would be my challenge to you. High school can be very rewarding. I still remember one young man, a teacher at that point, saying how that it wasn't until he was in like an 11th grade Bible course that some of the biblical truths were really got fastened in his heart. Is that going to happen for everybody? No. But it did for him. And I'm thankful for that. So may the Lord bless you in your search for good education, whether you go to 8th grade, whether you go to 9th or 10th or through 12th. Seek that your education, the education you are promoting in your school, is the very best that it can be. May the Lord bless.
Good afternoon. Well, I think this is one of the more unusual titles that I've seen on a program in a long time. What does it mean to be professional? You might think that by nature of the wording, we are promoting being professional. And as I recall, the burden of this session would maybe be better framed by asking the question, should we be professional? There's no context here at this point, is there? If I would tell you to close your eyes, and I want you to raise your hand, if you think your schools should be professional or they should not be professional, you wouldn't know what to do, would you? What do we mean by being professional? The burden behind this, I think, was to discuss and just think about, is there a wave of pressure across our schools to be professional? And how is that shaping our schools? I think it depends what we mean. We know it depends what we mean by being professional. If we mean elitism, we have a lot of cause for concern, don't we? If we mean that our schools are purposeful, then yes, this sounds okay. And so I would kind of like to get away from this word professional and think of it a little more in terms of elitism, an image that we struggle with sometimes wanting to create versus being intentional and purposeful in our schools, and not get hung up on this word professional. I'd like to look at a few categories of issues in our schools that I think this elitism is affecting us and we need to think carefully about, and call us to more intentional and purposeful thinking and decisions. Well, technology, I'm sure you expected us to talk about. I read this recently in a book about technology. It said, one thing's for sure, we left where we were, but we have no idea where we're going. That is sobering. One thing's for sure. Is that true of your school? We have left our roots, possibly. We've left the old way of doing school. We're moving on, but we really don't know where we're going. It's very dangerous, isn't it? I have the privilege of getting into many schools as a Christian Lake rep, and I see, of course, a huge range of the use of technology. Some have no technology being used in their schools. Now, I know you can say lights of technology, but you know what I mean. I'm talking about recent laptops, computers, that type of technology, okay? Some are using it for simple skills, and it's stained with skills like keyboarding or maybe learning how to use PowerPoint or spreadsheets or maybe advancing a little more to learning about QuickBooks. Others are using it for young children, third, fourth, fifth graders, to make up their own flashcard, set of flashcard. And then it's tailored somewhat then, of course, to their needs. Some schools allow online research. Of course, it's monitored and filtered, but there's a lot of schools that are doing that or thinking of that, especially in high schools. One of my concerns about, especially the online access, is simply this. A danger that our children see not the teacher or the parent as the source of knowledge, but it's over here, and it's quick. And teachers almost are in the way of advancing my education. Sometimes teachers are told, you talk too much. You know, we can find our answers over here. I read this very insightful statement by Hutterite as he reflected on COVID and the consequence of COVID in his community with older folks. I want you to think about this. Is this what our children believe? And I would like to suggest that the more we use technology in our schools, the less they are going to believe this. Here's a statement. It would be devastating to lose a large segment of our elderly people because it is in them that we maintain the repository of our wisdom and of our faith that can come only through lived experiences. That is a beautiful statement. That is a beautiful vision. It is in our older people, in our teachers, in our parents, is the repository of wisdom. And we appreciate it because it comes through lived experience. We can undo this thinking in our children if we're not careful, in an effort to be professional or progressive. This can be about some image that our school has. We can be intimidated by not having some of the technology that the schools down the street have. Can we be honest enough to admit this is a pressure that we're facing? We can create an insatiable desire for movement and noise and PowerPoints and YouTube. What's a preacher supposed to do Sunday mornings? Preaching can soon seem very boring. Silicon Valley, and I know you've heard this before, but I'm going to mention it again. I'm just fascinated how some of those men are sending their children to no-tech schools. Why? Because they believe you cannot Google wisdom. You can Google information, but you cannot Google wisdom. And they see the value of relationship between the teacher, and it's the teacher that's imparting this wisdom. One of the statements I read in a book recently, it said, the Silicon Valley people, they follow the advice of a drug cartel. Don't get high on your own supply. And here we are, wanting what they see sometimes as danger. Now please understand, I'm not saying that all of this is bad. But what is motivating us? Are we trying to create an image, or are we being purposeful in our decisions. What about academic standards? Elitism pushes us toward a high academic standard. Excellence. We want our students to be high achievers. We reward them. You walk into school and there are the names of the high achievers. What about those who simply never will get there based on the scores? I think a purposefulness calls us to accept every child and create systems in our schools where every child can be a success. I just beg you as administrators and boards to think of this. We had friends in our home recently, and they just talked about the tears that were shed night after night as they tried to get their child to come up to snuff in this high-achieving school. Please don't misunderstand. This is not a call to sloppiness, but to purposeful decision where every child has a chance. And I think some of this professional push, we're leaving people behind. Let's be careful. Curriculum choice. I was in a school recently, and this was not about Christian Light, so let me just say that. But the teacher simply said, I would love if we could get this curriculum in our school, mentioned a publisher, but he said, it's not professional enough for this school. Ah, see? The image, the embarrassment maybe of having those books in the school, that overrode, in his mind, a choice of quality curriculum, because it wasn't about being purposeful and intentional. It was about, how does this look to people? What's the image that we want? What's the reputation that we want in our community? What about the culture in your school? It's wonderful to have nice facilities. We're in a nice facility. I'm not talking against this at all. But I am impressed as well when I walk into a small school and see that they are purposeful in their very simple way of educating their children. There is something about that culture that is very appealing. And I walk in there and I see those happy children. It's the teacher and the student. It's very simple, but it's purposeful. It's intentional. And in that way, we could say it's professional. But again, getting away from that word. It is purposeful. And there's a culture sometimes that surrounds that and the community that comes behind that that I think is making some very powerful opportunities. And I question if some of that culture, we're losing that in some of our schools as we're facing these pressures. I was at a small school recently, a few days ago. Very small. Very simple. Was in the first and second grade classroom, and I was supposed to sign the guest book, as always you do in some of these schools. And the teacher numbered each visitor. I was visitor number 217 on March the 2nd, I believe it was, or 3rd, just the other day. Visitor 217. See, there was a culture that was welcoming, that was simple, that invited the community in. This was a small school, 40-some students. I think there was something purposeful and intentional about the culture of that school that I was really blessed with. Biblical humility must permeate our thinking and shape our decisions. This is not a call to sloppiness, carelessness. Humility is not incongruent with excellence and purposefulness, but it must shape our decisions, and we must be honest with why we're making the decisions that we are making. We must start with our values. What are our values that we really want in our schools? Our values, not our image. No, what are the values that we want to instill in our children, and out of that, make our decisions? Choices have consequences. Let's remember that. Let's know where we came from. And let's know why we're making the decisions we're making. And as best as we can, then we can know where we're going. God bless you. Thank you for your time.
Good afternoon. It's been my privilege to sit in approximately 400 board meetings since 1971, mostly as principal. So I offer you 10 tips for effective board meetings from observations over those years. Three of those will be attitudes, things for you to be, and seven of them will be acts and things for you to do as a board member. And so the first one being an attitude, and that is to see yourself as a director who leads music and gives direction, and the group follows. Many times you might not feel like you're a director, you might feel like you're a fifth wheel, or things are happening in the school and you're not quite sure what's happening, and you hope you're at least aware what's happening, but actually you're supposed to be giving the direction for it. And so this is, school directors are those who actually set the direction for the school, monitor the direction for the school, and continue the direction of the school. And so this is the first attitude to keep in mind. Keep the purpose of this board meeting in mind. We're gathering here to give direction as opposed to a work meeting. In a work meeting, you might, for example, clean the restrooms or put new spouting on the building. You say, well, why have a board meeting to put new spouting on the building? That would be better done. And so if you're shifting into work, such as discussing particular details of a curriculum, that's a work meeting, not a board meeting. That's not setting direction, that's doing a job. And so all the information shared, all the questions raised, all the discussions, all the deliberations, all the decisions should, in a board meeting, should focus on giving direction to the school, not in doing a job that needs to be done, as in reviewing a library book. And so part of this includes considering who we are, what are we doing and why, how do we go about it, and are we successful? So that's number one, an attitude of being a director and giving direction. That's the purpose of this meeting tonight, is to help to maintain direction for the school. Number two is also an attitude. This attitude is, remember, I'm part of a body, part of a group, five men, seven men, and a single member does not function apart from the body. A finger dismembered is grotesque. Only as part of a body do we function. And so individual members are not the board. The board needs each member to function. So any given meeting, any work that's done needs the input of each of the members of that group. The chairman needs to be sure that as the meeting proceeds, every member carries his part. So those are two of our attitudes. Come as a director, remember you're part of a body. Now, several things to do. So point number three would be, if you're jotting a word down, would be agenda. Have an agenda, follow the agenda, keep the agenda. And if there's a big item coming up that's going to occupy a large part of the meeting, you want to know what that is on ahead. If there's no big item coming up, typically it's helpful to have a list of routine items. You go down the check sheet in any given meeting and you follow that agenda. For example, opening with devotions and prayer, reviewing the last minutes, wrapping up old business, and then receiving reports and recommendations on various areas. It's usually, the most effective boards I've seen have committees involving one or two members of the board and some parents. And these people deal with issues relating to curriculum, finding staff, finance, taking care of property, planning parent-teacher meetings, dealing with transportation, and so forth. And so then you call for reports from each of these committees, or raise the question, is there something tonight on curriculum, something on finance, something on property? And then another major item in the agenda is to have the principal's report. That person, that head teacher or principal, who is the kingpin between the directors in the school. And then concluding with new business, which of course opens up to whatever needs to be dealt with. So the third point then is the agenda and following and keeping an agenda. The fourth one, I would say, is the picking up the principal, head teacher. the main connector between the school and the board. Compare the school directors to the ship owners and the principal to the captain, the one who's to actually take it to where the directors tell him to go. So there's a back and forth communication. In the board meeting, you want to ask good questions of the principal. How are we doing here? How are we doing there? And he is the one who has boots on the ground, so to speak, and reports how things are going, brings questions, knows what to bring to the board for direction, and also informs the board. A fifth point is another attitude. Be a faithful steward. When you make a decision, when you vote on something, there are at least two major ways to think about this. Number one way is to use your best judgment as a member of this board. When a question comes up and a decision needs to be made, you do want to use your best judgment with the wisdom that the Lord gives you. But also, you need to remember that you've been appointed to this board and you're representing a group of parents. And so you need to represent the best interests of all, and it might be different from your perspective. And so you might find yourself compelled, urged to vote or to move for something that you yourself wouldn't necessarily choose. And so you have to balance those. For example, maybe you aren't that interested in building a library, for example. Maybe you're not a book person, but you realize the parents really want a bigger library. So when the vote comes, why, you're going to represent the parent. Because after all, when this decision is made, when the board makes the decision, those five men, the decision they make, ideally should be the same decision that would be made if the whole group of parents were there. And so you need to consider the whole group and also your best judgment. Be a faithful steward. Sixth point is another thing to do, and this is a major one, to talk purposefully. Know when somebody opens his mouth and words come out of his mouth, know whether, is this input? Am I presenting information to give information, perspective, reports? Are we deliberating? Are we discussing what needs to be done? And then another possibility would be we are deciding and we have come to decisions, and this is where the director, the chairman, needs to be sure that you involve everybody in both the deliberation and decision. And then once a decision is made, give direction. Who's going to carry this out? How will it be done? And know when you need information. If you don't have enough information, table it, move it to the next time. Don't spend time discussing what you don't have enough information to discuss. Number seven, keep moving. Don't get bogged down in discussions with a few people that could better be done outside the meeting. If necessary, assign a few members to discuss it and bring it back to a future meeting. Number eight, another thing to do, keep minutes. Know when you have created a policy. If a decision is made that actually creates policy, enter it as policy in a separate policy manual. If it's just minutes, it's just minutes. Number nine, try to have one big picture item on the agenda at every meeting. These are the things we heard about this morning that are important but not urgent. Discuss something like evaluate the school culture, evaluate communication with parents, parent relationships, think about faculty health, faculty development, or does the program meet our needs? And number 10, the thing to do is to end on time. I've been privileged to serve on boards that rarely did a meeting ever go after 10 o'clock. Usually it was over by 9, 9:30. In numerous meetings, the chairman would say, do we want to finish this tonight or do we want to have another meeting? Usually board members don't want to have another meeting. If meetings drag on, there's an issue here. Either it should be dealt with in some kind of a work meeting with another group, or you need another meeting. So end on time.